Welcome to the Wahoo Central Podcast, which we record every week at the McHugh Center. I'm Jeff White, Director of News Content for VirginiaSports.com. The start of college basketball season is less than a month away, and my guest today is Brad Soderberg, the newest assistant coach on the UVA men's team. Brad, thanks for making that long walk over from JPJ. How's it going?
It's going great. Couldn't be better.
You arrived at UVA in late April. What has your Charlottesville experience been like so far? I know you've been forced back into bachelorhood.
I can't think of anything that I could call a negative during the time I've been here. It's been almost 6 months now, which is hard to imagine. The only thing that's been hard is my family's not with me, but from a professional standpoint, I absolutely love UVA. The staff that Tony's put together have welcomed me with open arms. The players are fantastic young men, and the city of Charlottesville speaks for itself. So it's just been a wonderful transition.
You have been the head coach for much of your career at Loras College, South Dakota State, Wisconsin, St. Louis, and Lindenwood University in Missouri. How has the transition back to assistant coach been for you?
Well,
tough.
I think it would have been tough if it weren't in a program that I'm very familiar with and a system that I've taught my whole career. I had no interest in being an assistant coach unless one guy called and said he needed my assistance, and that one guy called. So I'm more than happy to be Tony's assistant, and the transition has been very smooth because of that.
You were in a good situation as the head man at Lindenwood. Did you ever reach out to Richie McKay to ask him about working for Tony? Because Richie obviously had been in a similar situation before he came here.
No, I never. I've known Richie for a long time, and we're good friends. But I never talked to Richie about this job. And for that matter, I've never talked to Tony about vacancies on his staffs, whether it was here at Washington State. My relationship with him is such that I've always felt if I would call him whenever there was a vacancy on his staff, that wasn't what our relationship was like. He knew that I was available. He knew that I would be interested, and I just waited for him to make the call, and I'm glad that he did.
Every day when you come to work at JPJ, you walk past a Vince Lombardi quote on the wall outside the men's basketball offices. As a stockholder in the Green Bay Packers, was that a big selling point for you when you were weighing that job off?
Well, I said yes before I even saw the quote on the wall, but that just kind of really put a stamp of approval on it for me. I am a big Packer fan. I think, you know, growing up, first 22 years of my life, I lived about an hour and 15 minutes from Lambeau Field, and it's hard not to be a Packer fan when you're that close. They're just a part of the fabric of Wisconsin, and I'm happy to say, yes, I am a shareholder with the Green Bay Packers, so I'm proud to call myself an owner.
One of the very first books I owned as a kid was Instant Replay.
Oh, yeah.
By Jerry Kramer.
Yeah.
It's still on my bookshelf at home. I saw it the other day. Is it safe to assume you have a copy?
Yeah.
Or you've read that?
Yeah, I don't have a copy of it. I have read it. I have a bunch of other Lombardi books. My dad was a longtime football coach. And, you know, when you grow up that close to Lambeau Field, and back in the day, the Packer fans used to be able to watch practice behind a chain link fence. My dad talks about that all the time, about, you know, watching Lombardi build his teams and how he demanded execution and how he demanded the guy's effort. And so, you know, like I said, it was hard not to be a Packer fan as a youngster.
The blue-white inter-squad scrimmage sponsored by Pepsi is Saturday at JPJ starting at noon. Admission is free, as is parking. There'll be 4 10-minute quarters. Fans are excited, I know, to get a first look at players like Jack Salt and Jared Reuter and Darius Thompson, as well as the veterans they're familiar with. For the coaching staff, can you learn some things from a scrimmage like this that's played in front of a crowd that you might not get in a closed setting?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's like I mentioned the other day in practice to our staff, it's like having a quiz long before you get to the final exams. I think these inter-squad scrimmages are as much an evaluation of what we've done as a staff as to what the players are doing, because we get a better feel for, have they grasped the things that we're teaching? Have the young guys picked up to the level or as close to the level of the veterans as possible. And on top of that, I think it's good for the players to play in front of some people. We've been either in the practice gym or, you know, maybe there's, you know, 15 high school coaches there, but it'll be good for them to start to get the feel for that atmosphere.
As I think most UVA fans know already, you go way, way back with the Bennett family. You played for Dick Bennett at Wisconsin Stevens Point. You were an assistant coach on his Wisconsin team that made the Final Four in 2000. Then you took over from him as the Badgers head coach when he retired.
Mm-hmm.
How did those experiences help shape you as a coach and as a person even?
Well, to tell you the truth, Jeff, I would really have to write a book about how he's influenced me. I think I've said this many times during my coaching career when asked about Dick Bennett. Aside from my mom and dad, I don't know that there's been anyone that's had an influence on my life like Coach. Every stop that I've made along the coaching profession, he either wrote that critical letter of recommendation or made the big call for me. He's always been an advisor. He's been a great sounding board. The years I've been a head coach and things are a little bit struggling, and I'd give him a call, and he would always seem to have the right thing to say. I personally think he's one of the most underrated coaches that have been to a Final Four. He literally turned the University of Wisconsin basketball program around. What a lot of people don't know is before Dick Bennett got to Wisconsin, they had been to the NCAA tournament one time in a half century.
Right.
Now, I didn't say they won the national championship one time. They've been to the
tournament.
Imagine that, the Field of 64 March Madness once, a Big Ten school in a half century. And he very meticulously and in a very, I think I'm saying this without insulting him, in a very stubborn way, turned that program around. He said, here's how we're going to do business. We're not going to beat ourselves. So many of the things that the Virginia fans have heard about the younger Bennett,
right.
And he made it work. And I'll never be able to repay Coach Bennett for what he's done for me.
The Bennetts have become synonymous with the pack line defense. But when you played for Dick Bennett at Stevens Point, you guys were not in the pack line,
correct?
Right?
Correct.
What defense did you play? I think you told me before that you kind of saw the evolution or the birth of the pack line.
Yeah. What we ran when I played for Coach in the mid, in the early 80s was a defense we called the push, which, and again, I don't know how sophisticated our listeners are with the X's and O's, but for those of the listeners that are, it was based more on full denial and forcing the ball to the baseline, not letting the ball reverse from one side of the floor to the other. We would front the low post, all those kinds of things, which is almost the exact opposite of the pack. And this is where I think the genius of Coach Bennett, and I call Dick Coach Bennett and Tony's Tony, but Dick understood when we got to the Big Ten that at least most of the time we didn't have the personnel to compete with the, for example, the Mateen Cleaves and the Charlie Bells of that era. And so we had to find a way to, instead of trying to impose ourselves on them, to just protect the lane, to just not let them get easy shots and put ourselves in position to rebound. And thus, the conception and the beginnings of the pack.
What's your first memory of Tony Bennett?
I have vague memories of him in the gym when I was playing at the University of Wisconsin Stevens Point for his dad. He wasn't around the gym that much that I can recall. I've said it a couple times since I've been in Charlottesville that I was a student teacher. My last year as a physical education major at UW Stevens Point, and Tony and Eric Bacher, actually, yeah, who's on our staff here, happened to be in the first class that I had to teach, and I had to teach a wrestling unit, for goodness sakes, so I had Tony and Eric in my wrestling class. But that's kind of my first memory, and then shortly after that, Dick moved the family to Green Bay, where Tony went to high school and then played basketball, and I went off on my way to be a college coach, and all I know is that, you know, I remember, and I'm not saying this to be melodramatic, but I remember that I was watching the draft the night that Tony's name got announced on TNT, that he was selected by the Charlotte Hornets, and I kind of got a tear in my eye. I go, are you kidding me? You know, that scrawny little seventh grader had really worked his way, literally worked his way to becoming an NBA draft choice. And I think that, that hard work and that commitment is why he's such a good coach now, too.
You have a perspective that not many other people have. As Tony has gotten older and more experienced as a head coach, has he become, is he more similar to his father as a coach, or do they have distinct coaching styles?
Yeah, there's been some eerie reminders for me seeing Tony's different mannerisms and things that he says and things that he subscribes to. But I have to go through a whole season with Tony before I can fully know that. His dad was, at least the perception I get of Tony from having watched him on the bench, you know, on the games that have been televised, he appears to have a much more calm demeanor on the bench than his dad did. And that's no insult to his dad. That's just who he was. And I know Tony's got some fire from the practices now. I can, you know, occasionally I see, as I say, he throws a little pepper on it once in a while. But at least on the game court, on the sideline, he appears to be a little bit more low-key than his dad.
After 6 years of observing Tony Bennett practices, my sense is that he gives his assistant coaches an awful lot of autonomy. Is that indeed the case now that you've been here working with him?
Yeah, he does allow us to do quite a bit. I think what makes that very very easy for us is that the system is simple and the system is consistent. It's not like every week we come and go, that defense isn't working, let's do this one. And for that reason, you know, Ron and Jason are very familiar with what they're doing from having worked with him for a while, and I'm very familiar with it because that's what I did with Dick, and then that's how I coached in the stops that I've made before coming to UVA.
When you were at St. Louis, your coaching counterparts in Conference USA included Rick Pitino, John Calipari, Bob Huggins, and Tom Crean. Those are some heavy hitters in the college game.
One other one, just for UVA fans, is Dave Lato. Dave was at DePaul when I was there. You know, I learned so much coaching against those guys because, as any basketball fan knows, they're always at the top of their conference, and certainly Calipari and Pitino have been at the top of the nation. And so it was just great for me to kind of test my way with them, and our teams did exceptionally well. I mean, we beat Louisville on our court in St. Louis when they were ranked number 2 in the country. It was a thrilling win for our program. And, you know, I've just been very fortunate. As I told you before we started talking, I never pictured myself to be anything besides a Division III coach. I was hoping someday I could be the head coach at my alma mater. And so for me to, having had experience at Division I as a head coach and now to be here in the ACC, I'm just very thankful, you know, for all the opportunities I've had.
How familiar were you with the personnel here when you arrived in the spring?
Well, I think I knew them as well as any good fan.
Right.
But I didn't know them personally, of course, and I didn't know the weaknesses in their game that each guy has that you learn as you spend time with them. And I also didn't realize what wonderful guys they are. And I can say that because I've been in the business 30 years. Sometimes you work with some knuckleheads, mm-hmm. and that's no fun. And I really mean this. I have not met a guy here in this program where I go, man, I just do not talk to him for another 3 days. They're all really, really great guys.
This is a program that's won 60 of its past 71 games and back-to-back ACC regular season titles. Are there areas, as you see it, where major improvement is needed, or is it more a matter of taking small steps forward in several places?
Well, I think, you know, the challenge is to maintain, you know, because, you know, I remember when the first meeting I was in with this current staff, they were like, you know, what do we got to do? And I kind of stopped them and I said, hold on a second. You know what you've done? I mean, you've won 60 games in 2 years and back-to-back ACC championships. Certainly there's some things to tweak, but, you know, making any kind of major adjustment, I think, would be a big mistake. I think the obvious things are we've got to improve as shooters. And it's not for a lack of trying. The amount of work that's gone in the 6 months I've been here to improving guys from the perimeter has been astonishing. And I personally think that you don't change that without some recruiting in that area. I mean, you recruit shooters. It's hard to build them once they get here. But aside from that, I just see a real solid basketball team. I said to Tony the other day after practice that I don't know how good we're going to be, but I'd hate to run an offense against that defense for 40 minutes because those kids are physical and tough and well-drilled.
During the summer practices, the players were divided into teams for a three-on-three tournament. The games were hotly contested, hugely popular with the players. Pretty sure the tournament was your idea, the three-on-three workouts were. From a coaching standpoint, what do you like about three-on-three? And I think you used a 15-second shot clock in those games,
well,
right?
Yeah, the 15-second shot clock was a little bit in preparation for the fact that the shot clock is going to be shorter this year, and there will be more times during the course of the season where players are going to have to generate some offense at the end of the clock. But the three-on-three, the idea that I like about the three-on-three is that everyone has to touch the ball more often. You play five-on-five, and it doesn't take a math major to figure out you're not going to touch it as often. So three-on-three allows guys to get more touches. The 15-second shot clock made it a real faster-paced game and forced guys to make plays. And I think that I'm glad the guys enjoyed it because I think it's more fun than, you know, just running drill after drill after drill. And we had a league the whole summer, and there was a winning team and a losing team and so on. So it was a good time for everybody.
There's been a lot of talk about the rule changes you alluded to that will go into effect this season in the men's game, particularly the switch from a 35 to a 30-second shot clock. What do you think the impact will be in general, you know, on the college game and for Virginia in particular?
Well, in general, I don't think it's going to have a big impact. That might be a surprise to some listeners, but I, you know, everybody adjusts. We're anal about the way we prepare, so I think in the end it's not going to make a huge difference. However, I do think that teams are some teams are going to try to take advantage of this perceived shortened opportunity to score by pressing a little bit more and are right. Getting teams to waste time in the backcourt and forcing them to have to speed up their offense. But the truth of the matter is I think college basketball is a wonderful game the way it is. I'm always against rule changes. I mean, the popularity of March Madness is unbelievable. And so my general feel about it is to leave the game alone. Regarding the 30-second shot clock, I don't think it's going to make a big difference. I also know that the advantage for Virginia is we're not going to have to defend you for as long as normal. So good luck trying to get easy shots.
Now, a lot of people think, ever since this was announced, if it was difficult to get a good shot off against Virginia in 35 seconds, which it often was, mm-hmm. you got five fewer seconds to do it, it's going to be that much harder. So,
well, let's knock on wood and hope that's true, but that's sound reasoning, that's for sure.
All right, one final question for the most rabid Packer fan I know.
All right.
Aaron Rodgers or Brett Favre or Bart Starr?
Well, this is a hard one, but my answer is Aaron Rodgers, and here's why. One, and I hope that there's not many Packer fans that argue with me on this, but I get argument from within my family. I'm mad at Brett Favre because when he left the Packers – he had the option to go to a number of teams, and he chose the Vikings, which is a hated divisional rival. So I feel like he was trying to spite the Packers. And then you'll get a kick out of this, Jeff, but my dad was the athletic director at our high school, and for the all-sports bankment one year, he was able to get Bart Starr to come to our high school to speak, and I had Bart Starr in my living room, and it was incredible. But I still don't think that there's Aaron Rodgers is really, really special. And for us to have Aaron Rodgers after Brett Favre has been – you know, just a dream for any football program. That's thanks great. For asking.
Yeah. Well, then, thanks again for your time. I'll see you over at JPJ this afternoon.
All right, Jeff, thanks.
I'll be in Chapel Hill on Saturday for the UVA-UNC football game. But for fans who aren't making that road trip, there's the Pepsi Blue-White scrimmage at JPJ that afternoon. I'll be back next week with another Wahoo Central podcast. Until then, remember to check virginiasports.com for schedules and information on all our teams here, and thanks for listening.